It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to another edition of Wayne's Comics. This week, David Miller of David Miller Studios and I will discuss Secret Origin, the story of DC Comics, which is narrated by Ryan Reynolds. It talks about how DC started, some of the origins of the superheroes. We found some things that were very interesting in it. I'll also talk a little bit about the latest comics and, of course, what most recently has arrived at your comic store. So let's get to it.
I was very small, and I was always pushed around by bullies.
And I thought, gee, wouldn't it be great if I was a mighty person?
Instead of a poor kid, I imagined I'd like to be a rich playboy and fight crime at night.
We never drew ourselves. What would inspire us to draw poor little guys?
I felt that the world desperately needed a crusader, if only a fictional one.
Uncover the history and discover the secret origin of DC Comics.
We're talking again with David Miller of David Miller Studios, and this week we're going to talk a little bit about a DVD that came out recently. It's called Secret Origins, the Beginnings of DC Comics. And David, it's good to have you back on again. How's it going today?
Oh, great. Hey, thanks for having me back on. It's always fun.
Oh, no problem. We've both seen the Secret Origin DVD about the origins of DC Comics, and I was curious, what was your reaction to it?
Well, first, you know, it's a nice change, because the last two times we talked totally about Marvel. You know, it's really funny. You know, when you first asked me to take a look at this, I thought, well, you know, this will be fun, but is there anything here really that I don't know already? Because, you know, unfortunately, I've spent a lot of my life studying this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I got to admit, there was lots of stuff here that was a big surprise to me. I think the other big surprise is I think this is the first like informative video about this stuff that really comes off as for adults. It seems like whenever we have like some kind of history about the comics medium, there's a certain skewing. It's almost like unconscious. But this one, it was talking about the men who did this and about them as adults, as a craftsmen and artisans. And there was just a different tenor about it. So that was like the first thing I really liked about it. What do you think about that?
Well, I thought that I agree with it. I think that the DVD, which is narrated by Ryan Reynolds, of all people, who's going to be Green Lantern before long, it was an interesting choice to have him do it. He does the voice over it. When somebody else is not talking, he's the one that's doing the talking. I found that was an interesting thing. I think you're right about the fact that there was a lot I did not know about DC Comics, and I pride myself on being a DC Comics fan. One of the things that I was very surprised at was the very origin of DC Comics, was that these are sort of almost porn developers who were people where DC Comics was built on. They were doing things, and it was kind of very, you know, risque kind of stories that they were telling. And it got shifted over into superheroes, which I guess at that time was probably somewhat similar. But I thought that was so interesting. I did not know that business before.
Yes, it's almost like they had to escape the law to go into this, like, a bit more mainstream and lighthearted stuff. Although, I got to tell you, the first thing that I found very amazing was, and I can't remember the fellow's name, but the one man edited the first comic book of both Marvel and DC. I mean, maybe it was timely back then.
Yeah.
It was a comics packager, and he packaged the first book for both companies. Mm-hmm. And I like how Paul Levitt likened it to, like, the children of Abraham, the, you know, the Arabs and the Israelites, you know, split off and then start trying to kill each other.
Yeah. We're used to comics being such a big part of everybody's lives. And yet at that time, there weren't many people who were actually working on comics, so they often worked together. And I thought that was a real interesting thing. Now, of course, we look at DC and Marvel, the eternal war that goes on between them. But at that point, they were just happy to get help and get things done.
Piggybacking on something you just said, I don't remember exactly, but as I look at that DVD, the original properties, as originally presented and created and pitched, to me now are like unrecognizable for what they are now. I mean, if you look at how Superman was done then, taking care of mob enforcers, you know, very, very violently, like throwing them out of windows and maybe beating up wife beaters, basically taking the law into his own hands at every turn. You know, how we have Wonder Woman's original reason for being and even Batman carrying a gun. it's like it was two different companies, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of it was they expected these people to be super cops. They would go in and take care of things that the regular police people could not do. And so they would go in, and Batman basically was judge and jury. He would shoot somebody if he thought that they weren't worthy of it. I think, too, at that point, superheroes themselves were such a huge concept. There was no idea that there would actually be bad guys who had powers on their own. So it was beyond their concept. And I think, too, they wanted to resolve the problems they were familiar with. And at that point, you know, they weren't globally conscious as we are now. We've got the internet. We've got instantaneous information, all that kind of stuff. They were more interested in what was happening in their neighborhood. And I think they saw abuse and they wanted someone to come in and fix that. They themselves felt insecure to do it. So if, you know, like the movie says, waiting for Superman, they were waiting for Superman to come in and solve the problem. And I just thought that was something, you know, it was the way the comics started. But then we started to get villains. We started to get the Joker. We started to get bad guys who honestly were inspired by movies at the time. The Joker was inspired by a film, but they started to see, you know, as many costumes started going around, we started to get the bad guys. And a lot of them had to do with everyday, you know, events, you know, or things. The musician, we had all different kinds of people involved, and they became baddies just because that was what they had available to them. So it's an interesting era. We're watching at the beginnings of the movies and the beginnings of television and the beginnings of comics, and all these things are just, we're so fortunate now. We have all these things. But back then, they were still trying to figure things out.
That's a great observation. I didn't think of it that thoroughly, but I just am still kind of in a daze. If the Superman of 1939 met the Superman of 2010, I would be more interested in how their views of life differed than their power scales.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite the same, but it's almost like, you know, when they did the revamp of the Silver Age,
mm-hmm.
when you had the Barry Allen Flash to replace the Silver Age Jay Garrick Flash, and they are two totally different people. It's almost like the Golden Age Superman and the Silver Age Superman are two totally different characters. And I know that a lot of that had to do with the you know, the comics code. I don't want to like put DC on the spot, but it seemed like they conformed to the comics code the quickest and most absolutely. And maybe it's just the case that there were no superheroes at the time over at Marvel, so it kind of like missed that eye being turned toward them.
Mm-hmm.
So that when they came on, it was like, okay, things have died down a little bit and we can like stir it up. It's like that the characters were being molded by the code and kind of stayed that way from there on.
Yeah, one of the things that interested me was that the DVD actually makes it sound like the comics code wasn't invented to take care of superheroes. It was invented to deal with the horror genre. That terrible zombies and people getting murdered and axe murderers and all that kind of stuff. That's what the code was invented about, and the superheroes actually just got caught in the crossfire.
I think the code, oh gosh, the code, I have heard this, and I can't remember who exactly to apply this to, but, you know, when all this thing blew up with Frederick Worthen's book, and he was trying to pin juvenile delinquency on kids because kids read comics or they read horror stories, the thing was is that when the rules of it were being made, this was a chance to, like, put your competitors out of business, and they knew that, you know, EC Comics was just killing out there. I read that there was, like, a lot of verbiage, a lot of legal terminology, like if your book has ghastly in it, well, they can't run, or you know, blood curdling, or you know, those kind of very hot button words, which all of Bill Gaines's, you know, EC Comics, horror comics had, you know, Crypt of Terror and stuff. So he made it where they weren't going to rack those books because the comics code wouldn't be put on them.
Right.
So I think there was like a lot of behind the scenes manipulating going on there. If you'll notice that after that happened, you saw that Gaines came out with books like Suspense and Psychoanalysts, you know, things that would fall under the umbrella of the comics code, but no one wanted to read because, you know, they wanted to read, you know, stories about people's heads getting cut off. I don't want to, like, actually invite litigation against me by suggesting that, but it's been said enough, you know, and enough of these record books and these exposés and essays on the comics code, which is now defunct, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much nobody uses it that I know of.
Yeah, I heard, though, that actually it's like on the verge of the entity is going to go out of business, like they're just going to discontinue it.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't even a case of refusing to use it, that it's actually, its time is done.
Mm-hmm.
I think isn't Marvel and DC going to use like basically a
coding? Yeah, they have a coding setup now that they're setting up, some sort of a coding way to know that when you buy the book, it's going to be good for such audiences. And television has this kind of stuff, you know, where you get these unknown letter codes that show up at the beginning of a TV show, VLC, all those things. And I never know what those things stand for, to be honest. So I'm not sure if the comics are going to be able to do any better than that.
I've heard, like you said, based on TV, and I've heard based on gaming, you know, already established gaming codes, you know, like, you know, E for everybody, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Comics can be a cutthroat business just like any place else. If there's a way to get, you know, a step up on your competitor, whether, you know, just by being better or just taking advantage of a little litigation, they're going to do it. At least that's what I've observed.
Mm-hmm. One of the criticisms of the DVD that we watched was that in the 80s, when it gets to that point, it really doesn't cover a lot of the things that were going on in the 80s, but it spends a lot of time talking about Alan Moore's The Watchmen. Looking back now, I somewhat understand that they spent so much time on it because The Watchmen was really quite a change for comics. You know, here you had Alan Moore, who went on to be this amazing writer, doing all these incredible things that nobody else had been thinking of. And yet, you know, when he did The Watchmen, the good guys weren't always necessarily good. The story was so earth-shattering at that point that Alan Moore's Watchmen, of course, it was recently a movie, and some people were disappointed with it. I happen to like it. They're talking about a Watchmen too, but I hope they never do that. I mean, what was your feeling about when they talked about Alan Moore's Watchmen?
Well, I think you're right. It was a very big thing going on, but it wasn't the only thing. I didn't have a bad feeling about it, but I do think it's a case of, you know, we had was it like a 110-minute or like a 70-minute?
It was 90 minutes long.
90 minutes long.
And yeah.
There's only so much that can be put on. And also, I think that once you get to that point, didn't you feel like there was like, there's only like a little bit of time left, and they want to jump over to like, hey, what's going on now?
Yeah.
I mean, as groundbreaking as Watchmen was, oh man, it's still 25 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, now it's become the norm, those kind of stories, which I'm of two minds, you know, if that's the best thing or not.
A lot of the criticism of the DVD was that it didn't talk about, like, DC had their Crisis on Infinite Earths. There was the black and white explosion. There was the explosion of comic book stores, there were, you know, which were basically replacing the corner drugstore, which is where you got your comics. And so a lot of people thought that those things should have been included as well as The Watchmen.
I think those are definitely very legitimate criticisms, and maybe on the next one. As we just know, they just did this huge omnibus about, you know, DC, like the first 75 years of myth-making.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those same criticisms, even by the writer, Paul Levitz, you know, felt the same way. It's like, gee, I wish I'd talked more about, you know, Crisis of Infinite Earth and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the nice thing is there is so much diversity to DC Comics. I mean, they tried a lot of stuff over the years, and people still try to bring it back. Brother Power the Geek, who knows, maybe one day that will actually sell.
We also watched, in relation to this, a video on the release of that DC comic, that huge, massive volume about the history of DC Comics, which the DVD was really just a short, you know, extraction from that. We watched a video also where Paul Levitz and Jim Lee and Jeff Johns all talked about DC and where it goes. And he made an interesting comment. Somebody asked from the audience, who in the company gets to make the decisions about, like, toys and books and creative properties and what's going to be made? And Levitz's answer was that basically it's up to the creators themselves. Oftentimes the creators will make suggestions that they turn into toys or into comics or into movies or into other things. And so I was kind of interested to hear that they're not only thinking about comics these days, that they are thinking beyond that. Jim Lee talked about video games and how he's being consulted on that. So I was curious to think about that. I mean, as somebody who does comics, did you ever think about turning some of the things that you've been working on into like a video game or into a movie?
You know, yes, actually, but that would be like the best of all possible worlds type thing when I was thinking, like when I did my Cliff Diver all ages comic. I mean, the thought of a Cliff Diver action figure was like really, you know, just like the peak of success. At least that's how I would have seen it at the time. But I'm glad you brought that up, because that whole thing about talking about who decides on the toy and the marketing and the merchandising and now the games, that would have been a huge section all in itself. You know, I look at the games now, and it's so funny. It's like people write these Bibles for the games. It's almost like you're really, when you buy it, you're buying half an animated comic and then half a game. I really should, you know, investigate that a little bit more, so I could speak about it intelligently. But yes, the whole thing about, gee, wouldn't it be nice if your property became a TV show or an animated movie or action figure and all that stuff? Oh yeah, that would be great. You know, that was more of a dream than just working in comics. You know, like, like to me, working in comics was an attainable dream. And oh my God, turning it into something else—that's just pie in the sky. Seems to be part of it's just part of the process.
Right. It's, people expect now that we're going to get action figures and we're going to get toys and we're going to get all kinds of things.
Real quick, you know, on that topic, I once read an article with Mark Evanier when he wrote in Comics Buyer's Guide.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, this year at San Diego Comic-Con, there'll be action figures of Undar the Barbarian. You know, I worked on that back in the 80s, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he said, if anyone told me back then that someone was going to make action figures of these characters, I would tell them they were out of their mind.
And yet that's what's happening a lot. We see a lot of the old characters are now in stores in as action figures, as toys. And I'm always kind of amused by that because, yeah, were I back in my childhood, I would actually be going like, wow, look at all this great stuff. But, you know, now here we are much older and we have families or other responsibilities. And it's tough for us to buy all those things. But I think some of them are still very popular. So overall, we think that the DVD was reasonably good. If you had to score it, what kind of a score would you give the DVD, David?
We're talking about, you know, like a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah.
Just because of the surprise factor and also of craft, professional quality, I think really getting your money's worth, easily somewhere between a 9 and a 10, if not a 10.
Oh, cool. I would have given a 9 because, like these other people, I would have liked to have seen more. But, you know, when you only got 90 minutes, there's only so much you can do. But I would have liked to have seen more about current comics and, you know, how we got here. But, you know, hey, maybe that'll be a Secret Origins 2.
Why not? I think demand's there. I think the audience is there. And if it can be just as good. And the other good thing about a Secret Origins 2, a lot of these guys will still be alive.
Yeah.
When you talk about Warren Donenfeld and, you know, heck, Bob Kane, Siegel and Schuster, you know, even Julie Schwartz, they're all gone now. And
yeah,
they've done interviews, you know, before, and that is on the public record. But the nice thing about another edition of this is that a lot of the people will still be alive and can give firsthand accounts.
Well, maybe if DC's listening, they'll take this into account. Maybe we'll even get a credit if we suggested it. Yeah, like that'll happen. One thing I want to talk with you, too, before we conclude this interview is that I know you're working on a project that you're looking for support for, and it's an interesting one to me. I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about it. What is it you're working on?
Well, several things are going on, but my latest Kickstarter campaign is for a relationship strip that combines psychology and relationships and humor, and it's called Understanding Women, the Comic Strip. And it's basically a sit-down-on-my-knee young man, and let me help you, guide you through the waters of going out there and trying to get along with the other half of the population.
Well, there's one thing geeks can use more information about. It's how to get along with the women, because we're not known for being good at that.
If you go to Kickstarter.com, do a search for Understanding Women, you'll find it. And I'm also putting together the trade paperback for Avatar of the Futurians miniseries.
Cool.
The series that I licensed from the Dave Cockrum estate to be able to do new stories about Dave Cockrum's Futurians.
Right.
That's going to be taking up my time to try to get all the files together and getting that out there. And hopefully it'll be solicited very soon.
Very cool. Well, David, always a pleasure to talk with you. We'll talk with you again soon.
Sounds great. All right. Thanks, Wayne.
All right. Thanks.
Take care.
Secret Origin, the story of DC Comics. Look for it on DVD and for download.
This is the Emperor. You're listening to the Sci-Fi Diner Podcast. Eat it.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Diner Podcast. Join us, your hosts, Miles P. McLaughlin and Scott Herzog, as we serve up a delightful menu of science fiction interviews and news in the television, movie, DVD, and book world. Test your geek cred with trivia. Top off your meal with the Sci-Fi 5 and 5. Come visit the Sci-Fi Diner Podcast at scifidinerpodcast.com or subscribe to us in iTunes. We're serving up sci-fi from here to the end of the universe.
Together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review,
dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
This week, before I get into reviewing comics, I wanted to express my condolences to the family of Dwayne McDuffie. A bright light in comics recently went out when he passed. I was so sorry to hear that he had died. He'd done so many things I'd loved, including his work on Justice League Unlimited. I thought Static Shock was a great show. I thought a lot of the comics he had done with Milestone and other things like that were all superior. He was a terrific writer, a great editor. He was able to bring out the best in other people as well as himself. And I was really, really sorry to hear of his loss. I was kind of haunted a little when I watched Secret Origin. There he was talking. It was right after the day that he had passed, and I felt really sort of sad when I saw that. I really wanted to be able to just actually talk with him, which some people have had the privilege of doing, some of my other fellow podcasters. But I really wanted to express my condolences on the passing of Dwayne McDuffie. We will really miss him. This week in comics, we got a large selection of interesting books to talk about. The first one I'd like to talk about is Batman Beyond number 3, which is the conclusion of the first three-issue story arc. It has the Justice League involved in it. It's got a lot of other characters. Of course, Bruce Wayne's back. We get to see Terry McGinnis's family at a mall, which is where they belong, I guess. And that was an interesting book. I liked it a lot. I think Batman Beyond is a good comic, and it belongs inside the DC Universe. So I'm very happy that comic is doing very well. I think Brightest Day number 21 is just great. We're coming to the very end of that series. Wow, what a story that has been. It's interesting that Brightest Day, which everybody thought was going to bring everybody to life, including Deadman, suddenly now we've discovered that all these people who were in Brightest Day and were brought back to life are dying. Which is, of course, Mr. Johns loves nothing better than to throw a curveball at us, so that was a good one. I like that one a lot. I talked also in my column on scifipulse.net about Joe the Barbarian number 8 of 8, and I really think it bears repeating some of that here. Joe the Barbarian was a really cool little fable about a diabetic boy who, when he went into a diabetic coma, he found himself transported into a fantasy world where his rat, which he called Jack, was called Chack, C-H-A-K-K, which I thought was cool. There were all these sorts of barbarian rat families going around and clusters, and Jack was his sort of defender because he was called the Dying Boy, which was a good thing to say because he was dying in the real world. It was a good story. It was a nice fable. It took like 6 months or something for the last issue to come out. So I don't think we'll see Joe the Barbarian anymore, but it was a very cool concept. I liked it a lot. Maybe it'll pick up some when the trade or the hardcover comes out, but Grant Morrison does wonderful things. When he's bad, he's slow and he's not good. I don't know whether he was responsible for the delay, but I was sorry that it took so long. Something interesting that came out this week I think is worth buying is Oz Primer. It's from Marvel. It has to do with the Marvel comics that they're printing by Eric Shanauer. He's having a great time turning these novels into comics. And they're really good. I really have enjoyed them. I've bought the hardcover of every one so far. The stories have had really interesting endings. The second one, which had to do with Ozma of Oz, was a really good surprise at the end of that. So if you haven't read the Marvel editions of the Wizard of Oz comics, I would highly recommend them. Especially if you're teaching a class, you might really consider doing that. Because I think the children in the class would benefit from reading those comics. I think another comic that's worth talking about is Wolf Number 1 from Atlas Comics. For the first time in my life, I've actually bought an Atlas comic. It's off to a good start. I think the thing to do is to buy these comics and give them a try. The Grim Ghost is going to be one of them. There's going to be Phoenix. Those are all coming out very shortly. Wolf Number 1 is a very artistic book. It's about a Conan the Barbarian sort of like character who comes to the future, comes to our time, of course, to the real Savage Land, which is New York City, apparently. And it's a good story. It's supposed to intertwine with the other books, so it's going to be a company-wide story going on. And I'm kind of interested to see what they do with that. So if you haven't bought Wolf Number 1, I would say go out and get it and make sure that your local shop is ordering it. Of course, a great comic every time it comes out is Irredeemable. Mr. Mark Waid loves nothing better than to throw curveballs at us, just like Mr. Johns does. And Irredeemable number 23 is where we discover where it is that the Plutonian has been taken. It's a little bit of a shock when he gets there, when we find that out. So I would say by Irredeemable number 23, we're getting to the end of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Number 20 of the 24 issues came out. So I would recommend getting that. It's a literal translation of the book by Philip Dick, and it's good. It's been a very nice job. I really like reading it. I'm a big fan, of course, of Darkwing Duck, and there's an annual number 1 came out this week for $4.99. It's a good several stories in there. I love Darkwing Duck and his crazy phrases he likes to throw around. I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the classic rock band that refuses to stop touring. That one just kills me. I think that's a funny one. So if you haven't been buying Darkwing Duck, I'd say pick up the annual. It'll get you in the mood for another fun and silly little comic. Boom Studios, the same people who do Irredeemable, actually do Darkwing Duck. So that's an interesting combination. Of course, the Darkwing Duck is part of their kids, the Boom Kids line of comics. So I would say get Darkwing Duck Annual number one. There were two books from Radical Comics, who I like nothing better than but to brag on them. Abattoir number 3 of 6 came out, and also Erp number 2 came out. Both of them have this really neat painted look to them. Ian Cullen and I, who work on the scifipulse.net website, have been trying to be getting in touch with that company again. We had a nice interaction with them. And suddenly the gentleman who was working with us left the company, and we haven't been able to get in touch with the people. But recently we've made contact, and it's kind of fun. We were hoping to be able to promote their products a little more. It was an interesting conversation. We discovered that a lot of the times when they're actually making comics, they're thinking about movies. They're thinking about taking it to the next level, which I think is kind of a cool way to do it. It does give their books more of a cinematic feel, which is nice. The painted look is something I really like, so that's really cool. So if you haven't been buying books by Radical Comics, and that includes one of my favorites, Hotwire Deep Cut, which just recently finished, and they're going to put a trade paperback out of that, I would say get Abattoir and Erp. Make sure your comic shop has the most recent issues before that, because Abattoir is number 3, and you're going to need issues 1 and 2, and Erp number 1 came out recently, so be sure to get those. Of course, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the Formic Wars, Burning Earth number 2 of 7, based on the George R.R. Martin, The Ender's Game things. Those are such good books. I would highly recommend those. If you're looking for something that's a cohesive, interesting story, don't miss the George R.R. Martin Ender's Game books, because they are something special. The book that I'm really kind of disappointed about, and I did talk about this on the SFP Now podcast, but I don't understand what happened to Chew from Image. Chew started out as this wonderful, gripping, everybody talking about it comic, and what's happened is we're at issue number 17, and I find myself really not caring anymore. I thought it was a nice, great idea. You take an Oriental gentleman who has the ability to eat things, and when he eats meat, he knows what that the person or the animal that the meat came from experienced. And this was a great idea. I love the whole concept of it, but, you know, we're into the fourth set of 5-issue storylines, and I really don't think that it's holding up very well. And that's a sad thing, because we need strange and wonderful comics to brighten our day. And a story like Chew, which was something unique and wonderful, just needs to get back in the line again, get back up to the level that it was in that first 5-issue miniseries. It's just a tough thing, and it's really sorry to see it, but I would definitely say go back and get the first trade. The first trade collects the first 5 issues, so don't miss that one. As far as the other ones after that, not so much, sadly. First Wave number 6 of 6 came out, which is the last of the hero books that has Doc Savage in it and the Batman, as they like to refer to it, and the Spirit. I'm not sure how that group of comics is doing. They've cut it back to $2.99, most of them. This one's a $3.99, but I'm not sure that they're doing a good job on that. The Spirit is sort of, I've given up on it. Doc Savage, I'm working on it the same way. It's on double secret probation, so I'm not convinced that the First Wave stuff's going to be around much longer, which I'm really sorry to see that happen. Another comic I think really worth getting is DC Universe Online Legends, number 3. It's based on the multiplayer massive online game, and I guess I've got that backwards, but the massive multiplayers, I guess you need to be massive multiplayers in order to play it. The storyline's really interesting because it apparently Luthor has beaten Superman, and the Earth has to kind of try to survive after he's done that. The bad news is, for Luthor anyway, is that he's been betrayed by Brainiac, which I don't know why he thought that Brainiac would actually keep his word. And now he's having to gather together as many villains and heroes as he can to fight Brainiac. It's a good story. It's interesting to see what they're going to do with it. So I'm enjoying it. Marv Wolfman, of course, one of my favorite writers of all time from his Teen Titans days, is back. And it's a very good and interesting story. Be sure to pick up DC Universe Online Legends number 3. And get the first couple issues if you haven't gotten that. But that seems to be all the comics that are worth talking about this week. We'll talk more next week as they come out. Okay, let's check out the wonderful things that have arrived in your comic store that aren't necessarily comics. There's a softcover edition of a book called Creating Comics from Start to Finish, and I think that's a good one. If you're trying to break into comics or generate your own comic books, You should probably pick up this book. It sounds really interesting to me. One of the big clusters of things that's out, and every once in a while Disney does this, they release a whole bunch of little figurines. This group is Mickey Mouse, Mickey Ears Patriotic Box, the Mickey Mouse Black and White figurine, Mickey Mouse Winter Fun figurine, the Laughing Mickey figurine, and the Laughing Tinkerbell figurine. That's a lot of figurines. So if you're a Disney fan, and I know some of you people are, be sure to pick up that Disney collection and get it back home as fast as you can. I hate to say it, but this is a Marvel thing that's a little behind the time. There's a Fantastic Four panels lamp in a box. Bad news is the Fantastic Four, Johnny Storm's just died recently. They should have put this out a couple of weeks earlier, and I think they'd have sold it better. But anyway, Fantastic Four panels lamp in a box. There's a t-shirt that I got a kick out of, and I couldn't find any information about. It's called I Don't Want to Believe t-shirt, and it's only coming in large, which is, for geek people like me, that's not the right size to do it in. I don't know what it's about, but I Don't Want to Believe t-shirt is out. There's a bunch of Nerf darts and ammo and things for people who want to actually get out of their houses and start nerfing each other now that the warmer weather is arriving. So if you want to get your clip system dart, your dart tag ammo refill, your Nerf dart tag hyperfire, and your Nerf and strike deploy CS6 blaster, this is your week. They're all going to be in the comic stores. We talked about Disney putting out a whole bunch of good things before. Well, let's talk about Star Wars. Star Wars is the opposite side of that. Disney's for the girls, Star Wars for the guys. The Star Wars Asajj Ventress Force FX lightsaber is offered again, as well as the Mace Windu Force FX lightsaber. There's another mini lightsaber for the dark side detector that's out. That's $15. There's a Mustafar Volcano Lab. There's a Return of the Jedi Luke Force FX lightsaber. There's a Revan minibust that was rescheduled, and the Unleashed Darth Vader minibust, $60. If you don't happen to be buying Disney and you happen to be buying Star Wars, this is also your week. You better go with your card all juiced up and ready to go. The last thing I found of interest, and you know when your show has arrived, because when the comic store gets your pint glass set of two Deadhead glasses for The Walking Dead. And I guess Mr. Kirkman probably has bunches of these already, but if you want to make sure that your Walking Dead collection is completely complete, be sure you get your etched pint glass set of two with Deadheads on them. And that's the strange and wonderful things that are in comic stores this week. And that's another edition of Wayne's Comics. I again want to thank David Miller from David Miller Studios for coming and talking with me about Secret Origins, which was fun. We'll have to do that again in the future if they issue a second edition. I'll be back next week, and we'll talk more about comics. So until then, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.